This is disc number 7.
The witch woman had once said that if Richard and Kaylin ever married and lay together, she would conceive a monster. They had always assumed that Shota had meant that if they conceived a child, then their child would be a monster because that child would have Richard's gift and Kaylin's confessor power. But maybe that was not at all the real meaning behind Shota's foretelling. After all, nothing Shota warned them about ever turned out the way she had made it seem, even the way she herself believed. Shota's warnings and predictions always seemed to come about in a completely unforeseen manner, in a way that they had never even imagined. But at the same time, Shota's predictions had always turned out to be true. Was this what Shota's prediction had really meant? Was this the complex set of events finally reaching the climax of her prophecy? Shota had warned them emphatically not to marry, or Kaylin would bear a monster child. They had married. Could this be how Shota's prophecy unfolded? Could this have all along been the real meaning behind her warning? Were these monsters to sire a monster? Richard was choking on his tears. His death would not be the worst of it. Kaylin would suffer the worst of it. Suffer a living death at the hands of those brutes. Mother, their monster. Richard, you know I love you. That's all that matters, Richard, that I love you. Kaylin, I love you too. He couldn't think of anything more to say. Anything more meaningful. He guessed that there was nothing more meaningful. Nothing more important to him. Those simple words spoke a whole life's worth of meaning. A whole universe of meaning. I know, my love, she said with a brief spark of a smile that flashed for an instant in her beautiful eyes. I know. Richard saw a blade sweep around before his face. He instinctively backed away. The man straddling his legs was ready and jammed a knee between Richard's shoulder blades, stopping him from falling back, then pulled his head up by the hair. Kaylin, seeing what was happening, screamed again, flailing at the men holding her. Don't pay any attention to them, Richard. Just look at me. Richard, look at me. Think about me. Think of how much I love you. Richard knew what she was doing. Remember the day we were married? I remember it now, Richard. I remember it always. She was trying to give him the last gift of a pleasant, loving thought. I remember the day you asked me to be your wife. I love you, Richard. Remember our wedding? Remember the spirit house? She was also trying to distract him, to keep him from thinking about what was happening. Instead, it only reminded him of Shota's warning that if he married her, she would conceive a monster. Touching, the soldier behind him said. It's the passionate ones like her who are good in the sack, don't you think? Richard wanted to rip the man's head off, but he said nothing. The man wanted him to say something, to beg, to protest, to wail in agony. As a last act of defiance against such men, Richard denied him the satisfaction. Kaylin cried out her love, and that she wanted him to remember the first time she had kissed him. Despite everything, that made him smile. At the moment, she didn't care what was going to happen to her. She just wanted to distract him, ease the pain and terror of his last moments of life. His last moments. It was all ending. It was all over. There was no more. Life was over. His time with the woman he loved was over. There would be no more. The world was ending.
Richard! Richard! I love you so much. Look at me, Richard. I love you. Look at me. That's right. Look at me. You're the only one I ever loved. Only you, Richard. Only you. That's all that matters, that I love you. Do you love me? Tell me, please, Richard, tell me. Tell me now.
He felt the blade catch on the thin veneer of flesh covering his throat.
I love you, Kaylin. You alone. Always.
Touching, the soldier growled in his ear as he held the blade against Richard's throat. While you're down in the pit, bleeding out, I'll have my hands all over her. I'm going to rape your pretty little wife. You'll be dead by then, but before you die, I want you to know exactly what I'm going to do to her, and that there's nothing you can do to stop it, because it's the Creator's will being done. You should have long ago bowed to the ways of the Order, but instead you fought to keep your sinful ways, your selfish ways, and turned away from everything right and just. For your crimes against your fellow man, you will not only die, but you will suffer for all eternity at the hands of the Keeper of the Underworld. Suffer greatly. As you go to the dark afterlife, I want you to go there knowing that if your precious Kaylin lives, it will only be as a whore for us.
If she lives long enough and she has a boy child, he will grow up to be a great soldier of the Order and to hate your kind. We'll see to it that he comes here someday to spit on your grave, to spit on you and those like you who would have raised him in your wicked ways, raised him to turn away from serving his fellow man and the Creator. You think on that as your spirit is being sucked down into darkness. As your body grows cold, I'll be with the nice warm body of your love, giving it to her good. I want to make sure you know that before you die.
Richard was already dead inside. It was over. Life and the world were ended. So much lost. Everything lost. For nothing but a mindless hatred of every value, of life itself, by those who chose instead to embrace the emptiness of death.
"I love you now and always, with all my heart," he said in a hoarse voice. "You've made my life a joy."
He saw Kayla nodding that she'd heard him, and her lips mouthing her love for him. She was so beautiful, more than anything. He hated to see her inconsolable grief. They stared into one another's eyes, frozen in that instant that would be the last instant that the world existed. Richard gasped in a cry of terror, anguish, and sudden sharp pain as he felt the blade bite flesh, felt it slice mortally deep into his throat. It was the end of everything. Chapter 18. "Stop it," Nicky growled. Richard blinked. His mind reeled in confusion. Nicky had Shota's wrist in an iron grip, holding her hand away from him. But Shota still had an arm around his waist. "I don't know what you're doing," Nicky said in a tone so dangerous he thought that surely Shota would shrink back in fear. "But you will stop it." Shota did not shrink back, nor did she look in the least bit fearful. "I am doing what needs to be done." Nicky was having none of it. "Back away from him, or I will kill you where you stand." Kara, a geel in hand and looking even more displeased than Nicky, stood close on the other side of the witchwoman, blocking her in. Before Shota could return the threat in kind, Richard collapsed heavily to the marble bench surrounding the fountain. He was panting, gasping, and in a state of ragged terror. In his mind's eye, he could still see Kaelin in the hands of those thugs, still feel the sharp blade slicing deep into him. His fingers lightly brushed across his throat, but there was no gaping wound, no blood. He desperately didn't want to let go of the sight of Kaelin, but at the same time it was so horrifying a glimpse of her hopeless dread that he wanted nothing so much as to forever wipe it from his mind. He wasn't completely sure where he was. He wasn't sure exactly what was happening. It wasn't at all clear to him what was real and what wasn't. He wondered if he was on the cusp of death, and this was some confusing death dream before all his lifeblood drained out of him, some final delusion to torture his mind as he passed from existence. He groped, trying to feel for other bodies there with him in the pit. While Kara stood protectively before him, shielding him from the witchwoman, Nicky immediately abandoned her altercation with Shota to sit beside him. She circled an arm around his shoulders. "Richard, are you all right?" She leaned down, looking into his eyes. "You look like you've seen the Walking Dead." Ignoring Kara, Shota folded her arms as she stood over them, watching Richard. In his mind, the sound of Kaelin's scream still echoed. The sight of her as she cried out his name still tore at his heart. It had been so long since he had seen her. To see her again so suddenly, and like that, was devastating. "Richard, it's all right," Nicky said. "You're right here. With me. With all of us." Richard pressed a hand to his forehead. "How long was I gone?" Nicky's brow twitched. "Gone? I think Shota did something. How long was she doing whatever she did?" "I didn't let her do anything. I stopped her before she could begin. The instant she touched you under your chin, I stopped her. She didn't have enough time to do anything." Richard could still see Kaelin in his mind's eye, still see her screaming for him as the grimy hands of Imperial Order soldiers held her back. He ran his trembling fingers back through his hair. "She had enough time." "I'm so sorry," Nicky whispered. "I thought I stopped her soon enough." He didn't think he could go on. He didn't think he could summon the strength to draw another breath. He didn't think that he would ever again be able to do anything but abandon himself to despair. He could not hold back his anguish, his pain, his tears. Nikki drew his face against her shoulder, wordlessly sheltering him in the refuge of her embrace. It all seemed so futile. It was ending. It was all over. It always said that they didn't have a chance to defeat Jagang's army. The Order was too powerful. They were going to win the war. There was nothing Richard could do about it, nothing left to live for, but waiting for the horror of death to catch them all. Shota stepped up on the side of him, beside where he sat on the short marble wall, opposite Nikki, and started to lay a hand on his shoulder. Kara snatched the witch woman's wrist, stopping her. "I'm sorry to have to do that, Richard," Shota said, ignoring the moored Sith. "But you need to see, to understand, to—" "Shut up," Nikki said, "and keep your hands off him. Don't you think you've brought him enough pain? Does everything you do have to be injurious? Can't you ever help him without trying to hurt him or cause him trouble at the same time?" As Shota withdrew her hand, Nikki cupped hers to his face and with a thumb wiped a tear from his cheek. "Richard." He nodded at her tender concern, unable to summon his voice. He could still see Kaelin crying out for him as she tried to fight off the hands of those men. As long as he lived, he would be haunted by that sight. At that moment he wanted more than anything to spare her the pain of seeing him executed, and of her being in the cruel clutches of the Order. He wanted to go back, to do something, to save her from such inhuman abuse. He couldn't bear her world ending as she saw him murdered like that. But it wasn't real. He couldn't have been there like that. Such a thing was impossible. He could only have imagined it. Relief began to seep into him. It wasn't real. It wasn't. Kaelin wasn't in the hands of the Order. She wasn't seeing him being executed. It was just a cruel trick by the witch woman, just another of her illusions. Except it had been real for all those people in Galea, as well as untold other places where the Order had been. Even if it hadn't been real for Richard, it had been all too real for them. That was what it had been like. Their worlds had ended in just that manner. He knew exactly what they had suffered. He knew exactly what it felt like. How many countless, unknown, unnamed good people had lost their chance at life in just that way? All for the otherworldly ambitions of those from the old world. A new dread suddenly overwhelmed him. He had the gift. He was a war wizard. For most of those with the gift, it manifested itself in one specific area. But being a war wizard meant that he had elements of all the various aspects of the gift, and one aspect of magic was prophecy. What if what he had seen was really a prophecy? What if that was what was to happen? What if what he had seen was really a vision of the future? But he didn't believe that the future was fixed. While some things, such as death, were inevitable, that didn't mean that everything was fixed or that one couldn't work toward worthy goals in life, couldn't avert disasters, couldn't alter the course of events. If it was a prophecy, it only meant that he had seen what was possible. It didn't mean that he couldn't try to stop it from happening. After all, Shota's prophecies never seemed to come out the way she presented them. And anyway, what he had seen, what he had just experienced, was most likely Shota's doing. Richard squeezed Nikki's hand in silent appreciation. Her other hand on his shoulder returned the squeeze. Her concern melted a little under the warmth of a small smile of relief at seeing him recovering his wits. Richard rose up before Shota in a way that by all rights should have made her take a step back. She stood her ground. "How dare you do that to me? How dare you send me to that place?" "I did not send you anywhere, Richard. Your own mind took you where it would. I did nothing but release the thoughts you had suppressed. I spared you what would have otherwise come out in nightmares. I don't remember my dreams." Shota nodded as she steadied his eyes. "This one you would have remembered. It would have been far worse than what you have just suffered. It is better to face such visions when you can confront them for what they are, and grasp what truth they contain." Richard could feel the blood heating his face.
Is that what you meant before, when you said that if I married Kaelin she would bear a monster? Is that the real meaning hidden in your convoluted prophecy?
Shota showed no emotion. It means what it means. Richard could still hear the words of the Imperial Order soldier telling him what he was going to do to Kaelin, telling him how she was going to be treated, telling him how she would give birth to children who would grow up to spit on the graves of those who had wanted to live their own lives for themselves, those who believed in everything he held dear. Richard abruptly lunged for Shota and in an instant had her by the throat. The collision and his fierce determination to take her down carried them both over the short wall and into the fountain. With Richard on top, grappling her, their momentum drove them both under the water. Richard hauled her up by her throat.
Is that what you meant?
Water streamed from her face. She coughed it out.
He shook her. Is that what you meant?
Richard blinked. He was standing. He was dry. Shota stood before him. She was dry. His hands were still at his sides. Get a hold of yourself, Richard. Shota arched an eyebrow. You are still partly in your dreams. Richard looked around. It was true. He wasn't wet, and neither was Shota. Not one wavy auburn hair on her head was out of place. Nikki's brow twitched when he glanced over at her. She looked puzzled by what could be the cause of his confusion. It must be true. He was still dreaming. It really was just a dream. Just like his execution. Just like seeing Kaelin. He'd only imagined that he had Shota by the throat. But he wanted to. Was that what you meant when you said that Kaelin would bear a monster child? Richard asked a little more quietly, but with no less menace. I don't know who this Kaelin is. Richard's jaw flexed as he gritted his teeth, thinking of having her by the throat for real.
Answer the question, is it?
Shota lifted a cautionary finger. Believe me, Richard, you really don't want a witch angry with you.
And you don't want me angry with you, so answer me, is that what you meant?
She smoothed the sleeves of her dress as she chose her words carefully. In the first place, I have revealed to you at different times in the various things that I've told you what I see of the flow of events in time. I don't remember this woman, Kaelin, nor do I remember anything having to do with her. So I don't know what event or prediction you are talking about, as I don't remember it either. Shota's face took on the kind of darkly dangerous look that reminded him that he was talking to a witch-woman, whose very name inspired terrified trembling among most of the people of the Midlands. But you are venturing into serious matters of grave peril in that flow of events forward in time. Her brow drew down in displeasure. What, precisely, do you mean about a monster child? Richard turned to gaze into the still waters of the fountain as he thought about the terrible things he'd seen. He couldn't bear to say it aloud, couldn't bear to say it in front of others. To even suggest aloud that Shota had once made a prediction that he feared might actually mean that Kaelin would conceive a child fathered by the monsters of the Imperial Order. It felt to him as if saying it out loud might somehow make it true. It was so painful an idea that he pushed the whole notion aside and decided instead to ask another question. He turned back to her. What does it mean that I couldn't call my gift through anger? Shota sighed heavily. Richard, you must understand something. I did not give you a vision. I did nothing more than help you to release hidden thoughts that were your own. I did not give you a dream of my making, nor did I plant any ideas in your mind. I merely made you aware of your own intellection. I can't tell you anything about what you saw because I don't know what you saw. Then why would you... I only know that you are the one who must stop the order. I helped you bring your own suppressed thoughts to the surface in order to help you to better understand.
Understand what?
What you must understand. I know no more what it is than I know what you saw within your own mind that so upset you. You might say that I am merely the messenger. I have not read the message.
But you made me see things that...
No, I did not. I opened the curtain for you, Richard. I did not make the rain you saw out of that window. You are trying to blame me for the rain, instead of appreciating the fact that I did nothing but open the curtain, so that you could see it with your own eyes. Richard glanced over at Nikki. She said nothing. He looked up the steps at his grandfather, standing with his hands loosely clasped, silently watching. Zed had always taught him to deal with the reality of the way the world was. Taught him not to rail at what some believed was the invisible hand of fate controlling and conjuring events. Was he doing that to Shota? Was he trying to blame her for revealing things that he hadn't seen, or hadn't been willing to see? "I'm sorry, Shota," he said in a quieter voice. "You're right. You did indeed show me the rain. I don't have a clue as to what to do about it, but I saw it. I shouldn't blame you for what others are doing. I'm sorry." Shota smiled in a small way. "That is part of the reason why you are the one, Richard. The only one who can stop the madness. You are willing to see the truth. That is why I brought Jebra with such terrible accounts of what is happening at the hands of the Order. You need to know the truth of it." Richard nodded, only feeling worse. Feeling even more despairing over not having any idea of how to do what she thought he could. He met Shota's unflinching gaze. "You've made a great effort to bring Jebra here. You've come a very long way. Your future, your very life, depends on this no less than does my life or the lives of all free people, all those with a gift. If the Order wins, we all die, including you. Isn't there anything you can tell me that will help me to do something to stop this madness? I could use any help you can give me. Isn't there anything you can tell me?" She stared at him a moment before speaking, stared as if her mind were in other places. "Whenever I bring you information," she said at last, "it angers you. As if I were the one creating what is, rather than merely reporting it. We're all facing slavery, torture, and death, and you're suddenly miffed about getting your feelings hurt?" In spite of herself, Shota smiled at his characterization. "You think that I simply pluck revelations out of the air, as if I were picking a pear?" The smile faded as her gaze focused off into the distance. "You could not begin to understand the personal cost of bringing forth such shrouded knowledge. I do not wish to undertake such a formidable task if that dearly gained knowledge is going to do nothing but feed a grudge." Richard shoved his hands in his back pockets. "All right, I get your point. If you're going to make such an effort, you expect me to consider it earnestly. We all have everything at stake, Shota. I'd value whatever you can tell me." While Richard did honestly believe that Shota was telling him what she saw of the flow of events in time, he didn't believe that the meaning of such tellings was necessarily straightforward, or what Shota believed they meant. Still, she had always offered him information that in some way had been central to the issues at hand, Chainfire being only the latest. While her revelation of the word Chainfire had been without an explanation that would help him, that clue alone had sustained his effort to find the answer to what had happened to Kaelin. Without that single word, he would never have recognized that particular book as the one holding the key to discovering the truth. Shota took a deep breath, finally letting it out in resignation. She leaned toward him the slightest bit, as if to emphasize how serious she was. "It is for your ears alone." Chapter 19. Richard glanced at Kara and Nikki. By their expressions, there was no doubt in his mind as to what they thought of the very idea of leaving him without their protection. While he knew they were convinced of the necessity of their being close at hand, he didn't really believe that he would be any safer for their watchful guard a step away rather than a few dozen. After all, Shota had just demonstrated as much. It was obvious, though, that they didn't share such a view. Richard thought that maybe he could find a solution that would satisfy everyone. "They're on the same side. What difference?" "The difference is that it is my wish." Shota turned to the fountain, turning her back on him and folded her arms. "If you want to hear what I have to say, then you will honor my wishes." Richard didn't know if she was merely being obstinate or not, but he did know that this was not the time to test the point. If he was going to get any help from Shota, he needed to show her his trust. Likewise, Nikki and Kara were just going to have to trust him. He gestured toward the steps. "Please, both of you, go up there with Zed and wait." Nikki clearly didn't like the idea any more than did Kara, but she recognized by the look he gave her that he needed her to do as he asked. She shot the back of Shota's head a hot glare. "If for any reason I believe you are about to harm him, I will reduce you to a charred cinder before you have a chance to act." "Why would I harm him?" Shota looked back over her shoulder. "Richard is the only one who has a chance to stop the order." "Exactly." Richard watched as Nikki and Kara wordlessly turned and ascended the steps. He had expected more of an argument from Kara, but was glad not to have it. He shared a long look with his grandfather. Zed seemed to be uncharacteristically quiet. For that matter, so did Nathan and Anne. All three watched him as if studying a curiosity found under a rock. Zed gave Richard a slight nod, urging him to go on, to do what needed doing. Richard heard the fountain behind him abruptly start to flow again. When he turned back, he saw the water shooting up into the air at the pinnacle, falling back, and streaming from the points of the bowls to dance at last in the lower pool. Shota sat on the short marble wall surrounding the pool, her back to him as she leisurely trailed the fingers of one hand through the water. Something about her body language made the hair at the back of Richard's neck stand on end. When she turned to look back over her shoulder, Richard found himself looking into the face of his mother, his muscles locked stiff. "Richard." Her sad smile showed how much she loved and missed him. She didn't look to have aged a day from his last boyhood memory of her. As Richard stood frozen in place, she rose fluidly before him. "Oh, Richard," she said in a voice as clear and liquid as the waters of the fountain, "how I've missed you." She slipped one arm around his waist as she ran the fingers of her other hand tenderly through his hair. She gazed longingly into his eyes. "How I've missed you so very much." Richard immediately choked off his emotions. He knew better than to be lulled into believing it was really his mother. The first time he'd met Shota, she had appeared to him as his mother, who had died in a fire when Richard had been but a boy. At the time, Richard had wanted to take Shota's head off with his sword for what he interpreted as a cruel ruse. Shota had read the thought and reproached him for it, saying that appearing as she had was an innocent gift of a living memory of his love for his mother and her undying love for him. Shota had said that the kindness had been at a cost to herself that he would never be able to understand or appreciate. Richard didn't think that this time she was giving him a gift. He didn't know what she was doing or why, but he decided to confront it calmly and without jumping to conclusions. "Shota, I thank you for the beautiful memory, but why is it necessary to appear as my mother?" Shota's brow, in the likeness of his mother's, wrinkled in thought. "Do you know the name Barakas?" The hairs at the back of Richard's neck, that had only just begun to settle, again stiffened. He gently placed his hands on her waist, and with great care backed her away. "There was a man named Barakas who was first wizard back in the time of the Great War." With one finger, Richard lifted the amulet hanging at his chest. This was his. His mother nodded. "He is the one. He was a Great War wizard."
"That's right."
"Like you." Richard felt himself blush at the idea of his mother calling him great, even if it was Shota in her guise. "He knew how to use his ability. I don't." His mother nodded again, a slight smile curling the corners of her mouth, just as he remembered. His mother had smiled that way when she'd been proud that he had grasped the point of a particularly difficult lesson. He wondered if Shota meant that memory to have meaning.
"Do you know what happened to him? To Barakas?" Richard took a settling breath. "Oh, yes, as a matter of fact, I do. There was trouble with the Temple of the Winds. The temple and its invaluable contents had been sent to the safety of another world."
"The underworld," she amended.
"Yes, Baracus went there to try to fix the trouble. His mother smiled as she again ran her fingers through his hair. Just as you did. I suppose. When she finally finished fussing with his hair, her beautiful eyes turned down, her gaze settling again on his. He went there for you.
For me? Richard looked at her askance. What are you talking about?
Subtractive magic had been locked away in the temple, in the underworld, withdrawn from the world of life so that no wizard would again be born with it. Richard didn't know if she was merely repeating what he had learned, or if she was giving him what she believed to be the facts. From the accounts of the time that I've studied, that's what I've come to suspect. As a consequence, people were no longer born with the subtractive side of the gift.
She watched him with a kind of calm seriousness that he found disturbing in the extreme. But you were, she finally said in a way that carried great meaning concealed in simplicity.
Richard blinked. Are you saying that he did something while he was at the Temple of the Winds, so that someone would again be born with subtractive magic?
By someone, I presume that you mean you? She arched an eyebrow as if to underscore the sobriety of the question.
What are you suggesting?
None has been born with subtractive magic, and more, born a war wizard since then. Since the temple was sent from this world.
Look, I don't know for sure if that's true, but even if it is, that doesn't mean...
Do you know what War Wizard Baracus did upon his return from the Temple of the Winds? Richard was taken aback by the question, wondering what relevance it could have.
Well, yes, when he returned from the Temple of the Winds,
he committed suicide. Richard gestured weakly to the vast complex above them.
He threw himself off the side of the Wizard's Keep, off the outer wall overlooking the valley and the city of Idendril below.
His mother nodded sorrowfully, overlooking the place where the Confessor's palace would eventually be built.
I suppose so.
But first, before he threw himself off that wall, he left something for you. Richard stared down at her, not completely sure that he'd heard her correctly.
For me? Are you sure?
His mother nodded. The account you read was not privy to everything. You see, when he returned from the Temple of the Winds, before he threw himself from the side of the keep, he gave his wife a book and sent her with it to his library.
His library?
Baracus had a secret library. Richard felt like he was tiptoeing across fresh ice. I didn't even know he had a wife.
But Richard, you know her.
His mother smiled in a way that made the already stiff hair at the back of his neck stand out even more. Richard could hardly breathe.
I know her? How is that possible?
Well, his mother said with a one-shouldered shrug, you know of her. Do you know the wizard who created the first confessor?
Yes, Richard said, confused by her change of subject. His name was Merritt. The first confessor was a woman named Magda Cirrus. There is a painting of them across the ceiling down in the confessor's palace.
His mother nodded in a way that made his stomach knot.
That's the woman.
What woman?
Baracus's wife.
No, Richard said as he touched his fingers to his forehead, trying to think it through.
No, she was the wife of Merritt, the wizard who had made her into a confessor, not Baracus.
That was later, his mother said with a dismissive gesture. Her first husband was Baracus.
Are you sure?
She nodded firmly. When Baracus returned from the Temple of the Winds, Magda Cirrus was waiting for him, where he had asked her to wait, in the first wizard's enclave. For days she had waited, fearful that he would never return to her. To her great relief, he finally did. He kissed her, told her of his undying love, and then, in confidence, and after securing her oath of eternal silence, he sent her with a book to his hidden, private, secret library. After she had gone, he left his outfit, the one you now wear, including those leather-padded silver wristbands, the cape that looks as if it had been spun from gold, and that amulet, in the first wizard's enclave, left them for the wizard he had just ensured would be born into the world of life.
Left them for you, Richard.
For me?
Are you sure that they were really meant for me, specifically?
Why do you think that there are so many prophecies that speak of you, that wait for you, that name you, the one born true, the pebble in the pond, the bringer of death, the Caharan? Why do you think those prophecies that revolve around you came about? Why do you think that you have been able to understand some of them when no one else, for centuries, for millennia, has been able to decipher them? Why do you think that you have fulfilled others? But that doesn't mean that it was explicitly meant to be me. With an indifferent gesture, his mother declined to either support or deny his assertion. Who is to say what came first, the subtractive side finally finding a child to be born in, or it finally finding the specific child it was meant to be born in? Prophecy needs a kernel to spark its growth. Something must be there to engender what will be, even if it is merely the color of your eyes that has been passed down to you. Something must make it come about. In this case, is it chance or intent? I would like to think a chance series of events, if it pleases you. But at this point, Richard, does it really matter? You are the one born with the ability that Barakas released from its confinement in another world. You were the one he intended to be born, either by chance or specific intent. In the end, the only thing that matters is what is. You are the one born with that ability. Richard supposed that she was right. Exactly how it came to be didn't change what was. His mother sighed as she went on with the story. Anyway, it was only then, after he had made his preparations for what he had ensured would come about, that Barakas emerged from his enclave and leaped to his death. Those who wrote the accounts did not know that he had already been back long enough to send his wife on an urgent covert mission. She returned to discover that he was dead. Richard's head spun. He couldn't believe what he was hearing. He felt dizzy from the unexpected account of ancient events. He knew, though, from having been to the Temple of the Winds, that such things were possible. He had given up the knowledge that he had gained there as the price of returning to the world of life. Even though he had lost that knowledge, he was left with a sense of how profound it had been. The one who had demanded the price of leaving behind what he had learned in exchange for his return to Kalin had been the spirit of Darkon Rall, his real father. In her grief, Magda Cirrus volunteered herself to be the subject of a dangerous experiment that Merritt had come up with. Volunteered to become a confessor. She knew there was a good chance that she would not live through the unknown hazards of that conjuring. But in her grief, with her beloved husband, the first wizard, dead, her world had ended. She didn't think that there was anything for her to live for, other than finding out who was responsible for the fateful events that had resulted in her husband's death. So she volunteered for what everyone expected might very well be a fatal experiment. Yet she survived. It was only much later that she began to fall in love with Merritt, and he with her. Her world came back to life with him. The accounts of that time are in spots blurred, with pieces missing or misplaced in the chronology of events. But the truth is that Merritt was her second husband. Richard had to sit down on the marble bench. It was almost too much to take in. The implications were staggering. He had trouble reconciling the coincidences. That he had been the first in thousands of years to be born with subtractive magic. That Barakas had been the last one to go to the Temple of the Winds until Richard himself. That Barakas had been married to a woman who became the first confessor. That Richard had fallen in love with and married a confessor. The mother confessor herself, Kalin. When Magda Cirrus used her newborn confessor power on Lothane, they discovered what he had done at the Temple of the Winds. What only Barakas had known. Richard looked up. What did he do? His mother gazed into his eyes as if she were looking into his soul. Lothane betrayed them when he was at the temple by seeing to it that a very specific magic that had been locked away there would at some future point be released into the world of life. Emperor Jagang was born with the power that Lothane allowed to seep out of the safety of its confinement in another world. That magic was the power of a dreamwalker. But why would Lothane, the head prosecutor, do such a thing? After all, he had seen to it that the temple team was executed for the damage they had done. Lothane had probably come to believe, as did the enemy in the old world, that magic should be eliminated from the race of man. I guess his zealotry found a new fixation, imagining himself as savior of mankind. To that end, he ensured the return of a dreamwalker to the world of life, to purge the world of magic. For some reason, Barakas was unable to seal the breach created by Lothane, unable to undo the treason. He did the next best thing. He saw to it that there would be a balance, a counter, to the damage done, someone to fight against those forces bent on destroying those with the gift, someone with the required ability. That would be you, Richard. Barakas saw to it that you would be born to counter what had been done by Lothane. That is why you, Richard Rawl, are the only one who can stop the Order. Richard thought he might be sick. It all made him feel as if he were but a cosmic pawn being used for hidden purposes, a dupe doing nothing more than playing out the plan for his life contrived by others, performing his predetermined part in a battle across the sweep of millennia. As if reading his mind, Shota, still looking and sounding for all the world like his mother, laid a compassionate hand on his shoulder. Barakas saw to it that there was a balance to counter this damage. He did not preordain how that balance would function nor how it would act. He did not take your free will out of the equation, Richard. You think not? It seems to me that I'm merely the final piece of this game being put into play at long last. I don't see my free will, my own life, my choice, in any of it. It would seem others have determined my path. I don't think that is true, Richard. You might say that what they have done is not unlike training a soldier to fight. That training creates the possibility of accomplishing the goal of winning the battle should a battle come to pass. It doesn't mean that when the battle does come, the soldier won't run away, that he will instead stand and fight, or even that if he does fight to the best of his ability and training, that he will win. Barakas saw to it that you have the potential, Richard, the armor, the weapons, the ability to fight for your own life and your own world should the need arise. Nothing more. It was just giving you a helping hand. A helping hand sent across the gulf of time. Richard felt drained and confused. He almost felt as if he no longer knew himself, knew who he really was, or how much of his own life was of his own making. It felt to him as if Barakas had suddenly materialized out of the dust of ancient bones, a phantom come to haunt Richard's life. Chapter 20. There was one thing that still nagged at him, one other bit that still didn't make sense. How could the head prosecutor, Lothane, turn on his beliefs, turn on everyone in the new world? It struck Richard as too convenient an explanation that he fell under the power, the allure, of the beliefs of the old world. And then it came to him. Realization welling up through him in a rush with the power of floodwaters. The substance of it nearly took his breath. Something about the ancient accounts had always bothered him. Shota had stirred his memory of the things that had happened, and in so doing, all the existing pieces suddenly fell into place. Now he understood what was wrong with the story, what had always bothered him about it. Once he understood, he didn't know why he hadn't realized it long before. Lothane was a zealous prosecutor, Richard said, half to himself. It all came out in a rush as he spoke, his eyes wide and unblinking. He didn't find a new fixation for his zealotry. He didn't turn on them. He wasn't a traitor. He was a spy. He had always been a spy. He was like a mole tunneling ever closer to his objective. Over a long period of time, he worked himself into a position of power. He also had accomplices covertly working under him. Lothane was a wizard who had become not just widely respected, but powerful. With his political power, he had access to the highest places. When the opportunity finally presented itself, an opportunity that he had helped engineer, he acted. He saw to it that his co-conspirators were assigned to the Temple team. Just like the Order today, Lothane and his men had a strong faith in their cause. They were the ones who corrupted the mission. It wasn't a change of heart, a misguided act of conscience. It had been planned all along. It was deliberate. They were all willing to sacrifice themselves, to die for what they believed was a higher cause. I don't know how many of the team were actually spies, or if all of them were. But the fact is that enough were that they accomplished their goal. It could even be that they convinced the others to go along with them out of a confused sense of moral obligation. It was inevitable, of course, that the other wizards at the keep would soon enough realize that the Temple of the Winds project had been compromised. When they did, Lothane was only too ready to prosecute the entire temple team, and saw to it that they were all executed. He didn't want anyone left alive who could betray the extent of what they had actually done. Lothane had intended all along for their precise actions to be kept secret, so that successful countermeasures could not be undertaken. Those spies whom Lothane had assigned to the temple team went to their graves willingly, taking their secrets with them. By prosecuting and sentencing the entire temple team, Lothane was able to bury the entire conspiracy that he had devised. He eliminated everyone who had any knowledge of the true damage that had been done. He was confident in the knowledge that one day his cause would sweep aside all opposition and they would rule the world. When that happened, he would be the greatest hero of the war. There was only one minor problem remaining. After the trial, those in charge insisted that someone must go to the Temple of the Winds to repair the damage. Lothane couldn't allow anyone else to go, of course, because they would find out the true extent of the sabotage and might possibly be able to undo it, so he volunteered to go himself. That had been his plan all along, to follow up on the team himself, if need be, and cover up the truth. Because he was the head prosecutor, everyone believed that he had the absolute conviction to set matters right. When Lothane finally reached the Temple of the Winds, he not only saw to it that the damage could not be repaired, he used the knowledge he gained there to make it worse, to make sure that no one would find and fix the breach. He then covered up what he had done, intending to make it appear as if it had all been set right. There was only one problem. The alterations he made, using the knowledge of the temple itself, turned out to be enough to set off the temple's protective alarms. From the temple, in that other world, Lothane was unaware of the red moons the temple had awakened in this world, and when he returned, he was caught. Even so, he didn't care. He looked forward to dying, to gaining eternal glory in the afterlife for all that he had accomplished, just as Nikki explained about the way the people of the old world think. The wizards at the keep needed to know the extent of the damage Lothane had caused. Even though he was tortured, Lothane did not reveal the extent of the plan. To discover the truth of what had happened, Magda Cirrus became a confessor, but she was inexperienced at the task and still learning as she went. Even though she used her confessor power, she didn't realize at the time the importance of asking the right questions. Richard looked up at the face of his mother. Kaelin told me once that just getting a confession was easy. The hard part was understanding how to ask the right questions to get the truth. Merritt had only just devised the powers of a confessor. No one yet understood the way those powers functioned. Kaelin was trained her whole life to be able to do it properly. But back then, thousands of years ago, Magda Cirrus didn't yet grasp how to ask all the right questions, in the right order. Even though she believed she had gotten Lothane to confess to what he had done, she failed to uncover the true extent of his treachery. He was a spy, and despite the use of the first confessor, they failed to discover it. As a result, they never knew the full extent of the subversion carried out by Lothane's men on the temple team. His mother studied him from under a brow set in concentration. "Are you sure of this, Richard?" He nodded. "It finally all makes sense to me. With what you've added to the story, all the pieces that I could never before fit in place now fit. Lothane was a spy, and he went to his death never revealing who he really was, or that he had placed his own men on the temple team. They all died without ever revealing the true extent of the damage they had done. No one, not even Barakas, realized the full extent of it." His mother sighed as she stared off. "That certainly explains some of the missing gaps in what came to me." She looked back at him as if in a new light. "Very good, Richard. Very good indeed." Richard wiped a hand across his weary eyes. He didn't feel any great sense of pride in reaching down into the dark muck of history and pulling up such despicable deeds, deeds that were still slipping across time to haunt him. "You said that Barakas left a book for me?" She nodded. "He sent it away with his wife for safekeeping. It was meant for you." Richard sighed. "Are you sure?" "Yes." His mother carefully folded her fingers together. "While still at the Temple of the Winds, Barakas wrote the book with the aid of knowledge that he gathered there. No eyes but his have ever read it. No living person has so much as opened the cover since Barakas finished writing it, and closed the cover himself. It has, since that time, been lying untouched in his secret library. The idea of such a thing gave Richard a chill. He had no idea where such a library could be. But even if he found the right library, that would not tell him what he needed to know. He didn't suppose that there was a chance, but he asked anyway, "Do you have any idea what this book is called? Or maybe what it's about?" His mother nodded solemnly. "It is titled Secrets of a War Wizard's Power." "Dear spirits," Richard whispered as he looked up at her. Elbows on his knees, his face sank into his hands. He was so overwhelmed that he couldn't seem to take it all in. The last man who had visited the Temple of the Winds, 3,000 years before Richard had somehow, while there, seen to it that the temple would release subtractive magic which Richard had been born with, in part so that he could get into the Temple of the Winds to stop a plague started by a dreamwalker who had been born because a wizard, Lothain, had been there first and seen to it that a dreamwalker would be born in order to rule the world and destroy magic. And further, that same man who had seen to it that Richard would be born with subtractive magic had left Richard a book of instruction on the very magic it seemed he had bestowed on Richard in order to defeat the dreamwalker. After Barakas returned and committed suicide, the wizards had abandoned any further attempts to get into the Temple of the Winds to answer the call of the Red Moons, or for any other reason, as impossible. They were never able to get in to undo the damage the Temple team and then Lothain had done. Only Barakas had been able to take action to counter the threat. Very possibly, Barakas himself had ensured that no one else could get into the Temple of the Winds, probably so that there would be no chance that any other spy could ruin what Barakas had done to ensure that there would be a balance to the threat, namely, Richard's birth. Richard looked up. His mother was no longer there. In her place stood Shota, the loose points of her dress floating gently as if in a breeze. Richard was sad to see his mother gone, but at the same time it was a relief, since it was so disorienting to try to speak to Shota through the specter of his mother. "This library where Barakas sent his wife with a book, Secrets of a War Wizard's Power, where is it?" Shota shook her head sadly. "I'm afraid that I don't know. I don't think that anyone but Barakas and his wife, Magda Cirrus, knew." Richard wore the war wizard outfit last worn by Barakas, wore the amulet worn by Barakas, carried the gift for subtractive magic, very likely because of Barakas. And Barakas had left him what sounded like an instruction book on how to use the power he had seen to it that Richard had been born with. "There are so many libraries. Barakas's private library could be among any of them. Do you have any idea at all which one it could be?" "I know only that it is not among any other library, as you suggest. The library Barakas created was his alone. Every book there is his alone. He hid them well. They remain undiscovered to this day. And for some reason he saw fit not to leave those books in the safety of the First Wizard's Enclave?" "Safety? Not long ago, Sisters of the Dark, sent by Jagang, violated this place. They took books, among other things, to the Emperor. Jagang hunts books because they contain knowledge that helps him in his struggle to rule the world for the Order. Had the book Barakas wrote for you been left here at the keep, it very well might now be in Jagang's hands. Barakas was wise not to leave such power here, where anyone could find it, where every first wizard to come after him might have discovered it and tampered with it, or even destroyed it lest it fall into the wrong hands. That was what had happened to the Book of Counted Shadows. Anne and Nathan, because of prophecy, had helped George Cypher bring it back to Westland with the intent that when he was old enough, Richard would memorize that book and then destroy it lest it fall into the wrong hands. It turned out that Darkon Rall would eventually need to get his hands on that book in order to open the boxes of Warden, the same boxes that were now in play because of Anne's former sisters, who now had Kaelin, the last confessor, who, because of what was written in that book, had helped him defeat Darkon Rall. Richard lifted out the amulet he wore, which had once belonged to Barakas. He stared at the symbols making up the Dance with Death. This was just too much for it all to be coincidence. He peered up at Shota. Are you saying that Barakas foresaw what would happen and put the book in a place of greater safety? Shota shrugged. I'm sorry, Richard, I don't know. It may be that he was simply being cautious. Considering his reasons and what is at stake, such caution certainly seems not only to have been warranted, but wise. I've told you everything I can. You know all the pieces of the puzzle, of the history, that I'm aware of. That doesn't mean that this is all there is to it, but from other sources you also know additional parts of the history, so you now know more of the story than I do. For that matter, you probably now know more of it than any person alive since War Wizard Barakas was the first wizard. Out of all she had told him, nothing would do him any good unless he could find the book Barakas had meant for him to have. Without that book, Richard's war wizard powers were a mystery to him and next to useless. Without that book, it seemed that there was no hope of defeating the army that had come up from the old world. The Order would rule the world and magic would be eradicated from the world of life, just as Lothane had planned. Without the book, Barakas's plan was a failure, and Jagang was going to win. Richard gazed up at the glassed roof 100 feet overhead that let in some of the somber late-day light to balance the glow of the lamps down in the heart of the room. He wondered when the lamps had been lit. He didn't recall it happening. Shota, there could be no greater need for such knowledge. How am I supposed to succeed in stopping the Order if I can't use my ability as a war wizard? Can't you give me anything, any idea at all, of how to find this book? If I don't find some answers, and soon, I'm dead. We all are. She cupped his chin as she looked down into his eyes. I hope you know, Richard, that if I knew how to get that book for you, I would do it. You know how much I want to stop the Imperial Order. Well, why do you get specific information? Where does it come from? Why is it that it comes to you at specific times, like now? Why not the first time I met you, or when I was trying to get into the Temple of the Winds to stop the plague? I suppose that it comes from the same place you get answers or inspiration when you mull over a problem. Why do you come up with answers to problems when you do? I think about a situation, and sometimes the answers come to me. Fundamentally, it's no different, I suppose, than how anyone comes up with ideas. It's just that my ideas are unique to a witch woman's mind, and they involve events in the flow of time. I suppose that it's much the same as how you suddenly came to know the truth about what Lothane had done. How did that come to you? I suppose that it works much the same for me. If I knew where the book, Secrets of a War Wizard's Power, was, or had any idea of how to find it, I wouldn't hesitate to tell you. Richard heaved a sigh and stood. I know, Shota. Thank you for all you've done. I'll try to find a way for what you've told me to be of help. Shota squeezed his shoulder. I must go. I have a witch woman to find. At least, thanks to Nikki, I now know her name. A thought struck him. I wonder why she's named Six. Shota's countenance darkened. It's a derogatory name. A witch woman sees many things in the flow of time, especially those things having to do with any daughters she might bear. For a witch woman, the seventh child is special. To name a child Six is to say that she falls short, that she is less than perfect. It's an open insult, from birth, for what a witch woman foresees of her daughter's character. It's a pronouncement that her daughter is flawed. Naming her Six probably earned the mother her own murder at the hands of that daughter. Then why would the mother so openly declare such a thing? Why not name the daughter something else and avoid the probability of her own murder? Shota regarded him with a sad smile. Because there are witch women who are believers in the truth. Because truth will help others avoid danger. To such women, a lie would be the bud of much greater trouble that would grow from it. To us, truth is the only hope for the future. To us, the future is life. Well, it sounds like the name fits the trouble this one is causing. Shota's smile, sad though it had been, vanished. Her brow tightened with a dark look. She lifted a finger in warning. Such a woman could easily conceal her name. This one, instead, reveals it the way a snake bears its fangs. You worry about everything else and leave her to me. A witch woman is profoundly dangerous. Richard smiled a little.
Like you?
Shota didn't return the smile. Like me. Richard stood alone by the fountain as he watched Shota ascend the steps. Nikki, Kara, Zed, Nathan, Anne, and Jebra were huddled off to the side, engaged in whispered conversation among themselves. They didn't pay any heed to Shota as she passed, like an unseen apparition. Richard followed her up the steps. In the doorway, silhouetted by the light, Shota turned back, almost as if she had seen an apparition herself. She reached out and for a time rested a hand on the doorframe. "One other thing, Richard." Shota steadied his eyes for a moment. "When you were young, your mother died in a fire." Richard nodded.
"That's right. A man got in a fight with George Cipher, the man who raised me, the man I thought at the time was my father. This man who started the fight with my father knocked a lamp off the table, setting the house on fire. My brother and I were asleep in the back bedroom at the time. While the man dragged my father outside and was beating him, my mother raced in and pulled my brother and me from the burning house."
Richard cleared his throat with the pain that still haunted him.
He remembered the quick smile of her relief that they were safe, and the last quick kiss she had given him on his forehead. "After my mother was sure that we were safe, she ran back inside to save something. We never knew what. Her screams brought the man to his senses, and he and my father tried to save her, but they couldn't. It was too late. They were driven back by the heat of the flames and could do nothing for her." Filled with guilt and revulsion at what he had caused, the man ran off, sobbing that he was sorry.
"It was a terrible tragedy, especially because there was no one else in the house and nothing worth saving. Nothing worth her life. My mother died for nothing."
Shota, standing silhouetted in the doorway, one hand resting against the doorframe, stared at him for what seemed an eternity. Richard waited silently. There was some kind of terrible significance evident in her posture, in her almond eyes. She finally spoke in a soft voice. "Your mother was not the only one to die in that fire." Richard felt goosebumps race up his legs and arms. Everything he had known for nearly his whole life seemed to be vaporized in an instant by the lightning strike of those words.
"What are you talking about? What do you mean?"
Shota shook her head sadly. "I swear on my life, Richard, I don't know anything else."
He stepped closer and grasped her arm, being careful not to grip it as hard as he easily could have under the sudden power of his burning need to understand why she would say such a thing.
"What do you mean, you don't know anything else? How can you say something so inconceivable and then just say that you don't know anything else? How can you say something like that about the death of my mother and then just not know any more? That doesn't make sense. You must know something more."
Shota cupped a hand to the side of his face. "You did something for me the last time you came to Agadon Reach. You turned down my offer and said that I was worth more than to have someone against their will. You said that I deserved to have someone who would value me for who I am. As angry as I was with you at that moment, it made me think. No one has ever turned me down before. And you did it for the right reasons. Because you cared about me. Cared that I have what will make my life worthwhile. You cared enough to risk my wrath. When I assumed the likeness of your mother, that gift in some way influenced the flow of information coming to me. Because of that, just now, as I was about to leave, that single thought came into my awareness. Your mother was not the only one to die in that fire. Like all things that I gleaned from the flow of events and time, it came to me as a kind of intuitive vision. I don't know what it means, and I don't know any more about it. I swear, Richard, I don't. Under ordinary circumstances, I would not have revealed that small bit of information because it is so charged with possibilities and questions. But these are hardly ordinary circumstances. I thought you should know what came to me. I thought you should know every scrap of everything I know. Not all of what I learn from the flow of time is useful. That's why I don't always reveal to people isolated things like this. In this instance, however, I thought you should know it, in case it comes to mean something to you. In case it might come to help you somehow. Richard felt numb and confused. He wasn't sure that he believed it really meant what it sounded like it meant. Could it mean that she wasn't the only one to die because a part of us died with her that day? That our hearts would never be the same? Could it mean that she was not the only one to die in that fire in that sense? I don't know, Richard, I really don't. But it could be. It may, in that way, be insignificant as far as being something that would actually help you now. I don't always know everything about what the flow of time reveals or if it is meaningful. It could be, as you say, and nothing more. I can only be a help if I relay information accurately. And so that is what I did. That is the exact way it came to me, and in that precise concept. Your mother was not the only one to die in that fire. Richard felt a tear run down his cheek.
Shota, I feel so alone.
You brought Jebra to tell me things that gave me nightmares. I don't know what to do next. I don't. So many people believe in me, depend on me. Isn't there something you can tell me that will at least point me in the right direction before we're all lost?
This is the end of disc number 7. Please continue listening on disc number 8.